Audio Drama Production Podcast, Episode 35. Should I record on location?
The Audio Drama Production Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Audio Drama Production Podcast. My name's Robert, I'm with my colleague Matthew.
I went to say adios there, but yeah, move on quickly.
Okay, Matthew, yes. And this is the podcast where we talk about how to make great audio drama. You can get us on our website, audiodramaproduction.com, and we spend a lot of time, too much time, on our Facebook group, Audio Drama Production Podcast. So, on the agenda this week, Mr. Matthew.
Yeah, it's almost like this is field recording season on the podcast because Matthew Boudreau of Oral Stage Studios, friend of the show, certainly no stranger to the podcast, he's on. I had a chat with him recently. So again, we're diving into this topic about recording on location, recording in the field and things like that. So great chat with him. Coincidentally, next week as well, we've got John Ballantyne of Campfire Radio Theatre. He's going to talk about the making of Hungry Hollow, which was an excellent field recorded piece that they did. Mm-hmm. So just a wee bit of a theme at the moment. It's quite relevant to a lot of the stuff that's been talked about recently. So going to spend a couple of weeks.
And it's something we ourselves as audio producers are doing more and more of at the moment as well. So it feels very organic. I love that word.
My name is Matthew Boudreau. I am a producer, writer, director, and sound professional at Oral Stage Studios.
Matthew, welcome back to the Audio Drama Production Podcast.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
You're the second most, what would be the word? The second most consistent contributor to this podcast that's called Matthew.
Do I get my own show called The Matthew Show? Hello!
I don't know how big an honour it is, but it's an honour nonetheless in some small way. And it's brilliant to have you back. We really love you guys, and we wanted to have a wee chat today about some topics. Field recording and studio recording, this is a wee sort of discussion that's been going for quite a while now. I know that you are a studio man, first and foremost, but you've had a lot of experience recording in the field as well, haven't you?
Yeah, so a lot of that discussion actually goes back and forth between me and Fred Greenhalgh, who I work with frequently. I've worked with him on The Cleansed. I helped him record part of season 2 for The Cleansed. Now, for The Cleansed series, I mostly work on the back end, and I help him with his dialogue editing and do his sound design. So I hear it from that perspective, and I hear the problems that I have with field recording from that perspective. But then we also recorded intensive care in the field recording style, and while it's, you know, it came out really good, there were just a lot of consistent issues that you dealt with while recording that was never my favorite thing.
What was the sort of background towards you getting involved in doing the sound for Fred with The Cleansed?
Well, okay, we had produced 1918. It was our first audio drama, and we didn't think anything of it, and we put it up for an award with the Mark Time Award at the time, and we had seen the Mark Time Award online. We put it up for a Mark Time Award, and the panel listened to it, and they liked it, and we went to Minnesota to a show called Convergence, where we met with Jack Ward, and we met with Fred Greenhalgh, and that was the first time I met Domeen and Aline from Audio Epics, and we met there and we got talking, and Fred and I got talking, and Fred lives in Maine, Monique and I live in Buffalo, New York, but we're always up for a road trip. We'll travel anywhere. And Fred said, "Hey, I got a great idea. Why don't we do a Halloween show for Transcontinental Railroad?" I'm like, "Yeah." And I knew this writer. I was working with Samantha Mason at the time, who was my co-producer at the time. And we knew this writer named James Comtois, who wrote really great horror for stage. And we asked him if he wanted to take the challenge. And he wrote Intensive Care for us. and Fred and I both really liked the script, and we met in Biddeford Falls, Maine, and recorded everything in the field recording style, which I was learning on the fly just as much because I had never done it before. But I like working like that. I like working where not everything is under my control. I like learning new things and finding new ways of doing things. So the chance to go in there and record with Fred was an opportunity to really learn how to record in his style in the field. And, you know, I there are a lot of things I like about the style, and there are a lot of things that drive me nuts. So
what were some of the, I mean, presumably there were a lot of big challenges and problems that you encountered. What were some of those, and how did you work around them?
So one of the things I really enjoy about recording with field recording is you can put two actors right next to each other, and they can completely act out the scene, script in hand, so that, you know, they're not worried about lines, but they can really put the emotion. And a lot of Fred's newer recordings that we're going to be hearing as soon as it releases is a really great example of this. Unfortunately, I can't give it to you because we're not released yet. And but it really incorporates that sense of two actors interacting, that interaction that you really, really like. And that's what I like about the field recording. The guys at Wireless Theater Company, I can't believe I forgot their names. I love those guys. They sometimes do field recording. And again, what I like about it is the sound is so immediate and intimate that you get a real feel that you're in the space. The problem is when you're out recording in that. So for instance, while we were recording intensive care, we got the space, we got permission to use the space. We're in the Biddeford Mills, and just as we're recording this major scene that's taking place in this like really intense, quiet operating room, people started moving in across the hall from us. And they're carrying couches and leather chairs, and like it's like a psychology office that they're setting up. So there's like all kinds of like equipment and books and shelves and materials and stuff that they're lugging through. And I'm just like trying to get Nat Angstrom to give us a really quiet line. Come on. And they're beating around next door. And that's actually my biggest complaint is just – there's no way to isolate the external noise. And if you're in a quiet place like me or like Fred, sometimes that's okay because he's in the woods, pretty secluded. There's going to be some background noise. There's always some background noise, but, you know, it's a little bit easier. But then just as another example, I went to Gather Sound Effects, and I live in downtown Buffalo, and The Cleanse takes place in this post-apocalyptic future in which there's no machinery, there's no gasoline. And you open up a mic outside my door anywhere, and all you're going to hear is, like, turbines and motor engines. And, you know, I'm in an old Rust Belt city that's just cars everywhere. So it's really hard to capture that post-apocalyptic flavor when you're surrounded in sound. So, you know. And for me, a studio is a great way to isolate that, but you lose some of the intimacy that I was talking about in the translation, I guess. So what happens is I get great sound. I get great people with great voices and great characters behind the mic, but I lose a little bit of that interaction that's going on. So I'm trying to think of a way to maybe hybrid that. I don't know what I can come up with. Maybe it's using a really just well soundproofed studio room and having them interact, but recording field recording style. I don't know. I'll figure it out, I guess.
I'm sure he won't mind me saying, but we recorded some stuff for John Ballantyne at Campfire Radio because he's done a story about you know, it's set in Scotland, in a lighthouse. There's three people, so it was myself, Robert, and Jim that does some voices for us. And he got us to record that. And what we've actually done, because I spoke to John about what he wanted to do with this, and he said, like, for the interior scenes, do a table read with the Zoom. Mm-hmm. And for the exterior scenes that which were outside, because that was obviously going to generate a bit of reverb, but that was absolutely fine for what those interior scenes would sound like anyway. For the exterior scenes, we recorded that in the studio, so you were getting a really clean vocal. So I was saying to John the other day, it is a bit like a hybrid, because we've done this table read where we're acting together, and... You know, I wouldn't say it's crisp, clean vocals, because you've got a bit of reverb, because we were in a part of my house when we did it. So, you know, we're certainly looking at that in the future as being a way to do things and get that sort of field recording sense of, you know, acting together and things like that. I don't know what you would call it, if it's a hybrid or if it's studio or if it's location or what.
Sure. And what I'm kind of thinking about, too, is what if... Okay, so... You know, you kind of got two kinds of scenes. You've got scenes where dialogue prevails, and you've got scenes where action prevails. And in scenes where the dialogue prevails, you really want that voice to come through, and you really want those words to really, you know, be rich. And, you know, maybe you record that in the studio where everybody's kind of sitting around the mic, and you can hear their articulators very clearly, and everything's coming through very cleanly and very importantly. And then when you're talking about scenes where action that are more active, you know, there's two people fighting and yelling back and forth and something like that. And maybe you do that in a field recorded kind of situation, maybe more in the style that ZBS did with like The Mist, where they had like a really intricate, the Kumiskoff binaural system that they recorded that on. But if you just use a field recording style that's set in a studio setting, maybe you can control the dry end. You know, I'm really talking very theoretically here because I haven't done it yet, and it's something that I'm actually going to attempt to do with our next production, Otherworldlies, but I just haven't gotten to get into it yet.
Would it be like, would it really oversimplify it if you were to say that field recording is the friend of the actor and studio recording is the friend of the sound designer? Is that just far too oversimplifying things?
That really is oversimplifying things, because I have met so many actors who really love studio recording, because you can just sit down to the microphone. You don't have to worry about really what you're wearing, other than, you know, wearing clothing that's quiet and otherwise. You can sit around, you can be comfortable, drink at your water, you can get to the take. You don't have to have your material memorized. It's right in front of me. So almost any actor that I've ever met really likes voice acting, because it's just like all about playing with your voice and playing with the characters. And it's not as much about you, the actor, as it is about the character. And that's fun for us, I think.
I'm interested in... You know, we almost felt like when we tried field recording for the first time very recently, it was almost like doing a film shoot. And when it comes to going from the start of a scene to the end of a scene and an actor makes a mistake, in your experience, did you tend to go back to the start of the scene, or did you find it was all right to edit it out, even though there might be background sounds that would make it difficult to edit subtly and not sound like a really obvious edit?
I tend to be a garbage in, garbage out style of editor. If I hear any sound at all, it drives me nuts. I do realize at some extent that I can't control the sound and that I'll have to do so through editing, but I try to eliminate as much of the external noise as I possibly can. A lot of that's just done with, you know, basic sound blankets and cushioning and just kind of controlling the reverb in the room. And, you know, having in a professional shoot, you have a good production manager there that's, you know, really keeping people off of the set, but you can't always work like that in an amateur or in an indie situation. So,
from a listener's perspective, because sometimes I worry that we get too knuckled down in the sort of producer's perspective, and I always wonder, you know, do we forget the passive listener here? From a passive listener's perspective, I wonder if they take so much notice of whether something's studio or something's field recorded, or whether they just think, you know, that was really good or that was really bad, and they don't really care at all how it was recorded. Do you think that's the case?
I do think that's the case. I really do think it's sort of a Mac versus PC kind of argument where it's really just about what you work with. Fred Greenhalgh has produced a lot of great stuff, and I've listened to his stuff, and it comes out great field recorded. So has Wireless Theater Company. Wireless Theater Company does shows in the studio as well, and they come out great. And then you go to We're Alive with KC, and he does all of his stuff in the studio, does his own Foley, and all that stuff sounds great too. So it's about what medium you're comfortable with, first of all. And then it's partially about what medium is right for the story. And I try to think in terms of sound and what's going to sound right for the story. And sometimes it's about what's easiest too. When Fred and I did Intensive Care, and Samantha, Fred, and I, we recorded in Bedford, Maine. A lot. We had something like 2 weeks to turn out the entire show. It was a 30-minute show, and that was from recording to post-production to getting it out the door and on the air, kind of thing, including all the music. So we really had to record as much as we could on the set for that. So a lot of the sound effects that are going on in intensive care are actually happening. I was playing with the field recording for the first time, so I wanted to see how far we could go. So I was always sitting around with a shotgun mic and doing sound effects while the scene was going on. Like there's when Nat Angstrom's character is lying on the table and struggling against the gurneys, there's like this belty leather sound that's actually going on in the scene, and I've just got a really good MXL shotgun mic just pointed at this leather belt that I'm rubbing up against the thing in order to create the struggle. So we did a lot of sound effects. We had a body dummy that we threw right on the set when bodies were dropping, that kind of stuff. And then all I had to do was bring like any special effects, any voice effects where we were distorting their voices. It allowed me to play with that more. And I really had to have the time because I did both the sound effects and the music. So I had to have time to actually score the music to put it in there within 2 weeks. So everything that we could get on tape ahead of time was, essential. And in that case, I think the field recording method is actually better for a quick turnaround.
Would it be fair to say that that field recording would allow you to have a more consistent release schedule and record more material and get it out on a regular basis? Would that be fair to say, or is that a bit misleading?
I think that's a bit misleading, because if you do have a proper, a production team that's used to it, and by production team I mean anybody from 2 to 6 people, if you've got a system down, you can actually consistently, and the animation studios are actually known for this, you can get people in and record a studio, record an entire episode of an animation special. And most voiceover workers are by contract only allowed to be in the studio for 4 hours by United States AFTRA rules. So basically what happens is you've got 4 hours in order to get at least one episode down. So, and people are used to really chugging in and getting in there in that 4 hours and really churning out the episodes. So it is possible, but you have to have really experienced actors and really experienced producers and just people who know exactly what they're doing and do it well and consistently.
So I suppose the key is not how you're going to record, but how you plan your recordings and how you go about that, isn't it?
Absolutely. The plan for your recording is essential. I'm planning my recording usually in pre-production. Like as soon as I have the scripts in my hands, I'm breaking down sound effects and writing what's going in where and what's going on where and what I'm hearing in my head. I'm trying to like represent it onto the script with all of my notes, and then I type up a big, like, 5-page, this is my vision for what this sounds like kind of thing, which comes off as a rambling between, like, geek science and, like, some, like, poser poetry. But then that's how I, develop into going into the studio. And if I'm directing, it actually helps me because now I know what the scene needs to sound like. And if I'm not directing, then, when I'm doing post-production, I know what the scene is, and I can just build from there and build around that structure that I put down in place. So planning, yes, very, very essential.
If you were advising a complete beginner who wanted to get into recording their own audio dramas, would you recommend going out in the field to sort of cut their teeth? Or would you prefer to actually go into the studio and start working in there?
It's really going to depend on the personality of the person doing it. If you have more of a film-based brain, I do kind of agree with we had that discussion going on with Fred and Jack. You know, I do kind of agree that having a film-based background tends to lead you more in the point the mic at the thing kind of field recording kind of thing. Although I have a film background too, and I tend to like the studio, but I also do sound effects and design for film, so it's coming from a different angle. I think if you're more of the stage type and you are more used to working with your voice as an instrument, or if you're a vocalist, then being in the studio and sitting behind a mic, especially if you're a vocalist and you're already familiar with the microphone, that sitting behind the microphone and being able to hear your voice in a set of headphones and being able to play with your voice would be more to your liking. Definitely for someone like Kai and Chris Conroy, who does all the voices himself, or like Firesign Theater, where you've got a lot of improv going and a bunch of people four people doing a bunch of different voices. You know, you're going to want to do that in a studio setting so you can actually record, back up, move, layer this over this, and, you know, actually play more than I think you could in the field setting.
I suppose the story you want to tell has a lot to do with it as well, doesn't it? Because as great as field recording is, there are just some stories that you couldn't possibly go out and record in the field, isn't there?
There's a lot of 1918 sci-fi epic where the Red Baron becomes a cyborg, is dead but is revived as a cyborg. You can't really do that in the field. I couldn't find any cyborgs who were willing to help us, and the aliens just weren't paying attention to our demands to bring more ships. You record that in the studio, that way you can actually generate these unusual worlds. And that's actually what I like about doing studio work, is in the field, it sounds great. I love hearing a great field recorded piece, but you're limited to your real world. You can always, you know, make it hyper real, and you can add things to it and, you know, make it a little more fantastic or a little more sci-fi. But if you put me in a studio, I can put you anywhere in the world just being given sound effects in somebody's voice. You know, I can change the effects to a person's voice while they're recording in the studio. And I've actually done this several times, usually if I'm dealing with robotic characters, because there's a tendency on the actor's part, and it's a natural tendency to want to impersonate the robot. So they start talking like this, and they start relating all of their lines in a robot. And no, I don't want you to sound like that. So what I'll do is I'll put usually a ring modulator on their channel into their headset. I'll record it dry, but they're hearing the ring modulator, and then they play to the ring modulator, which is already making them sound like a robot, and then they inflect a little bit better, and they just start acting. And that's something you can't actually do out in the field. So it's really... I really think it's Mac versus PC. I think it's what you're comfortable working with. And yeah, absolutely what works with the story.
I suppose there should be some sort of like a checklist drawn up that asks you certain questions and then tells you, right, you need to go to the studio or you need to go to the field. You know, it asks you questions about your story, your location, your availability and things like that. It'd be great to get something like that set up, wouldn't it?
The checklist can be too narrowing, though, sometimes. You know, I agree that there are certain parameters that I take into consideration, but a lot of it's just kind of, hearing the scene and getting a feeling for where the scene should take place. And if it feels like it needs to be more open and honest and, like, real, yeah, then you field record it. And if it needs to be more theatrical and a little more over the top, or, you know, especially comedies, a lot of times I think comedies as a general rule, unless they're like action based, would probably be best recorded in the studio. I, you know, wouldn't like nail that down to anything, because I don't like nailing anything down. But yeah, I think after a while, just experience gives you a feel for, yeah, this is better for this and this is better for that. And there are ones that cross lines that could be recorded either way, and that's where the preference comes in.
Just looking at you guys yourself at Oral Stage now, I saw that you went and visited the folks at Our Fair City recently, and now it looks like you're getting a new studio set up. So what's all happening? What's all going on with you now?
Oh, well, there's a lot going on actually here. It's been pretty wonderful. So we started getting involved in the community theaters. And by community theaters, I don't mean like community theaters, like, but I mean professional theaters within the Buffalo community. And there has been an actress who has been on the Audio Drama Lovers website for a while, who's actually from the Buffalo community. And I had seen her in a few plays. Her name's Melissa Leventhal. And so I sat down with her and I saw that she was on that. And I'd seen her in a few plays, and she was perfect for a character that we have in our upcoming show. So I sat down to talk with her, and she's like, oh, great. I just came in contact with this. We just started this theater company, the Buffalo Theater, Chrysalis Theater Company, which Matthew Mooney had started. And she's the artistic director there. So what we ended up with is this moment where, okay, so she's got this new theater company. What can I do for them? What I can do for them is I can provide them with technical background. I do have a technical theater background, and actually started sound design for theater, as well as set design. So, you know, I can give them that. I can loan them my skills in exchange for Melissa's skills as an actor and as a casting director, because she knows all of the people within the Buffalo community, which we've actually got a pretty strong theater community. Most people hear about New York and Chicago. You don't really hear about Buffalo, but we're kind of a middle ground in between those two, because we're about halfway in between the two. And Buffalo has this just really great artistic community that's growing right now. And what we found happened is it just was like really auspicious. Everything kind of came together and coincided with a renaissance that's going on in Buffalo in the arts community. And the weird thing is the renaissance that's happening involves a project called the Ferry Corridor Project, which is basically bolstering the businesses and focusing on a renaissance along Ferry Street. What's interesting about that is I actually live on Ferry Street, and Oral Stage Studios is right out of our house on Ferry Street. And my son actually goes to school at the Buffalo Academy of Visual and Performing Arts. It's our performing arts school here, which is also on Ferry Street. So that's all kind of swept up and into that. So we just we talked to one person, we just got sucked into this vortex of the Buffalo community. But it's been great, because you get sucked in and now suddenly we know a videographer, and now suddenly we know a person who knows a person who knows Robbie Takac from the Goo Goo Dolls, who owns GCR Recording Studios in Buffalo. So there's like all these connections that are starting to form, because we stopped branching out quite so much and started working locally.
So what about the, you know, creating the studio? That's something that's taking place as well, isn't it?
Yeah. We just tore down all of the music room, which was also formerly my son's office where he did his homework. Now he's up to the dining room table again, while we're completely tearing apart the room, tearing down the ceiling and the drywall and everything, soundproofing the room, deadening it, just doing everything we can to bring the SBC rating down to a professional studio level, so that we can save some money down the road. You know, it's going to be really expensive on the front end, but since we're looking to start working professionally within the community, we decided that we need a full-fledged studio that people can just come in and we don't have to rent another studio. We don't have to go to another studio. People can just come in, sit down to a microphone, and we can start recording. We're also building a nonprofit that's geared towards bringing the audio community to Buffalo, just bringing resources to the Buffalo audio community, to podcasters, to voice actors, to audio dramatists, if there's others in Buffalo, to a place where they can get hold of inexpensive use of equipment, inexpensive use of a studio space, you know, with, you know, access to all of the professional contacts that I have now, the videographers, the photographers, the, you know, basically just having like a small production operation that people can like look at all of the little fingers that we can touch upon and say, okay, I need somebody to do, you know, production stills for me. Do we have somebody to do that? I'm like, and I can go, yeah, I know this person, and this person. Which one do you want? Here are their rates. You know, and we want to kind of create a community of artists within who are all interactive, because especially for something like film or audio drama, you touch on all of those different arts when you're putting a production together. So the more people that you have like these connections with, the better. The second thing we wanted to do is we wanted to emulate, without stealing, although I did tell them that I'm totally stealing their all of their ideas, Our Fair Cities. Our Fair City, when you go there, and even when you listen to them online, they've got this groove. They are the party, and they're the party that you want to be at. And that's the kind of groove that you want to have, because that's going to attract people to you. That's going to attract people to your live shows. That's going to attract people to listen and download and listen to what you have to say, because what you have to say is always genuine and honest and sincere and well thought out, and really trying to pull in that community atmosphere that they hold. Because we went down there, like you said, last month to help them with the release of the sixth season. And yeah, it was just they were an amazing team to work with. Every one of their team members is incredibly dedicated and incredibly good at what they do. And we kind of wanted to build a community like that within Buffalo.
So will we be seeing a series from you guys in future, or are you going to sort of stick to the one-offs model, the self-contained stories model?
No, we decided to move into our first series. 1918 was actually supposed to be a series, but then we ran into problems, and we had actors move to L.A. and actors that it just complicated making the series based on the original people that we had, because Robin Reed moved to L.A. and Avery Pearson moved to Toronto, and like suddenly we were like working out of four different cities instead of just two. So 1918 went by the wayside. Our next series is takes place in the underworld, where Death is having an existential crisis and is dealing with this little gypsy psychic girl who doesn't believe in psychic powers, named Nuri. It's going to be a series. It's a comedy named Otherworldlies, and we are currently in the editing phase of development. We're still writing. We're finishing up the writing, and we're about to go into our table reads. But we're also right in the midst of the heavy winter theater season. So a lot of my actors are tied up with that. So we won't be able to really get started until after, you know, after the spring thaw, and everybody can actually get around on the roads again too.
Brilliant to chat as always, Matthew. And just before we wrap up, anything else in the pipeline that you've got to promote at the moment?
I do have one other thing. So the 14th of next month, Fred Greenhalgh and Sibby Whalen and Justine, I can't remember her name. I just met her. I'm sorry. But we're all speaking at South by Southwest in Austin on the virtues of using audio drama both as a tool for creation of film scripts or as an alternative to film.
You need to record that so we could put it on the show. Do you think you could sneak a Zoom into that?
Sibby is actually looking into that. She is going to talk to the people and see what kind of permission we need in order to get it recorded. We do want to get it recorded because there's that one. There's another audio drama panel the day before with Casey Whalen from We're Alive. And three other audio dramatists. I don't have the list in front of me, unfortunately. I'm sorry. And there's like a third one, plus a friend of mine from New York City who's actually been in our audio dramas is releasing a horror film at South by Southwest at that same weekend. So it's kind of exciting. We're all going to go kind of come up, go in and converge on what is classically a pretty relevant film festival. And represent audio drama there. So I hope we do it justice.
Thanks again to the wonderful Matthew Boudreau for that. And make sure you do tune in again next week, of course, for the equally resplendent John Ballantyne of Campfire Radio. He'll be talking about his perception of field recording in relation to Hungry Hollow.
Elsewhere, some correspondence. We've neglected this recently, so got a few wee emails and tweets and things like that to catch up on.
Mm-hmm.
Stories of Mahabharata. Did I get that right?
I think so.
I could say it right in my head, but I'm not a great linguist.
You know, saying it right in your head, that's called reading.
That's right, yeah. In response to the episode about putting together your local audio drama group, So good show today. Local paper works for promo. We sent out press releases and got an interview request with a local paper. So great stuff there. And yeah, maybe the local paper is the way forward. As we mentioned on that episode a couple of weeks back. On the Facebook group, Eli got in touch in response to Steve's piece last week when we talked about conveying thought in audio drama. He said, "I'm not the biggest fan of the thought bubble, but if it suits the story, go for it. I suspect it's more appropriate for stories with a lighter tone as any sort of contrivance,
mm-hmm.
yes, contrivance, tends to distract from a more dramatic scene, at least for me." Ooh. As with narration, did you want to interject?
I do. I think that's possibly true, but not exclusive. I think if there's some heavy action going on and you've got the pulsing music, the and you have a little bit of narration, I quickly ran down the hall. I could see that he was back on his feet. He'd already turned to me with the sword. I had one moment to do something about it. Something just as brief as that. I think that kind of thing can also work. But I see his point about the lighter stuff saying, you know, "So there I was, walking down the road, not a care in the world, when suddenly this rabbit drew up alongside me in a car. Not the usual Wednesday," I said to myself. Something comic like that could be effective as well. I don't know.
There you go, Eli. Put in your place by Robert.
That's not my touch.
Ugly scenes here. As with narration, I think it's important to be consistent. That is, don't just suddenly start using it 15 episodes in. Let your listeners know it's a device you'll be using so that it doesn't jolt them out of the story later. Wise words there. You couldn't just add the narration. Unless, of course, you know, we brought a bit of narration in season 2 Aftermath. But
yeah.
The reason was that he was talking about the winter and his tape recorder. His toy, as Joe called it.
Mm-hmm.
So
you mucking about with that toy? And our old pal, Domine de Groot, he says, "I'm actually a big proponent of narration, even though I know many people disagree. I love the interplay between dialogue, sound, and storytelling. To me, a narrator brings clarity to what might otherwise be confusing. In addition, I personally feel that the use of a narrator's voice adds to the intimacy and the specific magic of the medium. But that may be because of the way I was first introduced to audio originally. It's also a bit genre-specific." Interesting words there, yeah, especially the bit at the end, genre-specific. Again, I wonder if he's alluding to the lighter tones, or maybe he thinks that action sequences are best with narration, or maybe he feels the old-style radio dramas are the type that have it, I don't know. Domine would be interested to know what you meant by genre-specific. Which genre, and why?
Michael got in touch. He says, "I've been planning on starting my own audio drama podcast for a while now, and just ran across the Audio Drama Production Podcast. Good choice, the Audio Drama Production Podcast. Haven't heard it myself. That's my words, not Michael's. Anyway, I've spent the last few days listening to all of your episodes, and I just wanted to say it's been a tremendous help in wrapping my head around the concept. My background is in novels and filmmaking, so I'm fairly new to podcasting in general, but I've been getting quite a bit of help from audio engineers and other podcasters I've known. But none of it was audio drama specific. You've done wonders in filling in the gaps in my knowledge base. Thank you very much, Michael. Glad we could be of assistance. And he poses the question. He says he's out of episodes to listen to now. He won't be once this is out. However, and while I eagerly anticipate more, I was wondering if you knew of any other resources I might look into. Audio drama communities I might join to participate in whilst I develop my own show. Anything of that nature, really. I gave Michael a wee reply. I mentioned there was the Audio Drama Talk forums, which are really good.
Mm-hmm.
There's also the big main audio drama Facebook group. Pretty big. I think there's about 1,000 people in there. Elsewhere, I know there's like voice acting forums and things like that. I've not really got any experience in them, but they exist as well. So, yeah, plenty of stuff out there. And
I guess just start adding people on, you know, that's what we did, I guess, on Facebook, adding people that you know that are obviously connected to each other for the similar reasons. If you, you know, maybe even ask people that you've started to speak to, who else should I get to know? You'll see the same old faces on people's friends lists, and I don't know, start your own group as well. No, I think there's probably enough groups, actually. Just talk to us on the Audio Drama Production Podcast Facebook group / whatever.
I think he might ask this question before he was in the group. So that's probably a solved issue for him now.
Aye, fair
enough.
Redundant
issue.
Just get talking then, and we'll take it from there.
Rick got in touch. I produced the Evolution Talk podcast and will be launching an audio drama in March. I have to thank you for your show. It's been an invaluable resource for me over the last few days as I'm holding auditions and researching production tips. I've managed to pretty much devour your entire catalogue. The show I'm working on is Who Said Anything About Free Will, a sort of educational time travel dramedy. The site is set up at whosaidfreewill.com.
Very interesting. Now, without getting all political or anything like that, we do, of course, welcome everyone from all walks of life, but this is an interesting topic for me. Free will, evolution, and so on. It's obviously a hot topic in the world these days, so I, for one, will be checking out. And I love time travel stuff as well, so count me in.
Thanks, Charles Darwin.
And the last bit of correspondence here, well, proper correspondence, is from David, and he says, "Greetings from Hollywood. Hello, Robert and Matthew." He doesn't talk like that, I presume. But anyway, I shall continue. "I just discovered your podcast and absolutely love it. My name is David Milano. I produce an audio drama in the style of old-time radio called Macabre Fantasy Radio Theatre. We've been around since 2012 and have performed at several local conventions in the greater Los Angeles, California area. Thus far, our shows have been performed live in front of an audience, with our actors reading their scripts from stands, our music is run from a laptop plugged into the soundboard, and most of our sound effects are performed live from my collection of found or custom-built props." How cool is that? Live performances. "Our recordings are taken from the board mix onto an SD recorder. You can check out some of our past shows on our site, macabrefantasy.com. That's M-A-C-A-B-R-E. Macabre. Macabrefantasy.com. As you can tell, we try pretty hard to evoke an authentically period 1930s, 40s sound in our show." And he adds, "As an audio drama enthusiast myself, I'm really enjoying listening to your insights and perspective on the art form, as well as your wonderful interviews. Keep up the great work. Thank you very much, genuinely." That's lovely, isn't it?
Yeah, thanks everyone. I've been a bit down this week for some reason, so that's always nice to hear from people.
Oh dear.
You know how you just get some of the weeks where you're just like,
what am I doing
in life?
Yeah.
But that's really nice. That's cheered me up no end. Another wee thing that's cheered me up is we got our first voice map route finished last week.
Mm-hmm.
We mentioned this a few episodes ago, but if you're not familiar, we teamed up with a company called VoiceMap, who are based out of South Africa, and they do GPS-controlled tours, audio tours around cities. And most of it, as far as I know so far, has all been factual stuff, but we've started writing some fictional stuff for them, and it's actually an audio drama that I'm working on at the moment, Time is Money. It's a time travel story. I heavily adapted the story in that and created a route around Edinburgh. Robert, you came up last week, I think it was. We recorded the voices for that.
Sure did.
So, yeah, bit of production, back and forward with the guys at VoiceMap and just tweaked a few things. And now it's actually went live. So if you live in Scotland, especially Edinburgh, you can go to voicemap.me. We'll put all the links in the show notes. You could download that for $1.99 because they operate in dollars. I think that's, what, £1.20 maybe?
Approximately, yeah.
So you can do that, and it takes you on a wee tour around part of Edinburgh. Lasts about 25 minutes, I think. So,
yeah.
And it's a wee time travel story, sort of sci-fi story. So will we stick the first link on? Will we play that?
Yeah,
teaser?
Why not?
Let's go for it.
I hope the narrator's good.
All right, agent. My name's Jennings, your mission coordinator. A few very important words of warning before we start. I understand this is your first trip back in time to Old Earth, so please remain still and try not to look like a fish out of water. As you probably know, I can communicate with you, but you can't communicate with me. This is just one of the many issues we have with time travel at the moment. You know, along with it being punishable by death if our beloved security service ever gets wind of it. I'm talking to you through a device people used to refer to as a mobile phone. Or cell phone. Once I begin to guide you through this mission, you may place this device in your pocket and continue to listen to me through the small headphones in your ears. This won't attract any attention, as it was a common practice between people in this period of history. Anyway, according to my control radar, we have successfully managed to send you back to the city of Edinburgh, which was the capital city of a country called Scotland on the now uninhabitable planet Earth. It is almost a century before the nuclear apocalypse scorched this world beyond all recognition. If this is your first time off of the space station, you will probably find the sky and sun very bright and the atmosphere very open. As I say, try not to let this show too much. We can't be too careful, and you'll get used to it before long. You may have noticed that humans travelled around in large boxes of metal on wheels in this period. These were known as cars. Though these are confined to the clearly visible roadways, you need to be very careful, as we'll need to navigate you over a few of them in order to meet the contact. Anyway, the sooner we get this done, the sooner we can bring you back to 3015 with the painting. You are in a sector that was known as St. Andrew's Square. The large column behind you is the arrive and return point, so we'll guide you back here once you have what you came for. With your back to the column, look down the corridor ahead of you. These were known as streets, and like the corridors of the space station, each one had a name. The street in front was called George Street. On my word, you need to travel across the roadway. And again, I must stress that you take care to avoid confrontation with these cars, as they can very easily injure or kill you. Do you see the red cylindrical pillar over the roadway? Head for that. These were called post boxes. People in this era used to send each other handwritten notes through them. How quaint. Begin to walk then, and once you have crossed, continue down George Street, walking on the left-hand side of the road. You will hear from me again very shortly.
So there you go, that's our first voice map route, and that is the city of Edinburgh. You need to go there and do that route. And if you do, get in touch with us as well and let us know how you found it. because that'd be really cool. I've not done it myself yet, but I plan on. Robert, you're working on the second one at the moment, aren't you?
I am. It's been a while in coming along while I've been toying with the different ideas, but basically it's a disembodied voice from the past who is guiding the listener down the Royal Mile from Edinburgh Castle, and he's talking about his adventures. And I have finished 5 out of 7 checkpoints. You know, you move from one checkpoint to the next and you hear the next part of the file. And I've definitely got the story finished in my head, and I've finished 5 out of 7. I probably expect to finish it this very evening. And then hopefully a couple of tweaks, a couple of landmarks, a bit of description, send it off to the boys or the boys stroke girls or whatever at VoiceMap, and they'll authorise it.
Good stuff, exciting stuff. So all the links to that in the show notes of the episode. And finally, the spam email of the week. We're not going to actually read an email out this week because we've read out quite a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
But I did want to give a heads up to the Simple X Webs spam filter, all in capitals, because we've actually had 14 or 15 emails at time of recording from them. Asking us to participate in the Simple X Web spam filter. I think it's a pretty good venture they've got here, because as far as I could see, if you pay them for this filter, they'll stop spamming you.
Right.
So it's a pretty innovative way, I think, of going about their business.
It's like the mafia of the internet world. Lovely internet you've got here.
Yeah, protectionism.
It'd be a real shame if somebody spammed you to hell for a week, weeks on end.
I actually wondered, maybe it's actually called the Simple X Web Spam Filler, and they've misspelled filler. They've put a rogue T in there.
Oh, dear.
So it's actually designed to fill up your inbox with spam.
Yeah. Are you suffering from a shortage of spam? Then help is at hand.
I did laugh to myself in one of the emails where it said, you know, it was one of those really urgent emails.
Oh.
And the author of it was begging me, you know, you have to get in touch with me, you have to reply. And it seemed really important, so maybe we should.
And you've got to do it now. Don't delay.
Yeah, they've got a shortage as well. We've only got so much spam left.
Yeah, like the shed designs from last week, where they had those designs that were sitting nicely on a computer, but it was a time-sensitive offer.
Next week, John Ballantyne, Campfire Radio Theatre, location recording, Hungry Hollow, those are all the key words. As always, get in touch with us, info@yapaudio.co.uk. Join the Facebook group, join the Twitter, join the Instagram. Do you join Instagram? I think you just follow. And that's the same for Twitter. Follow.
You have to have an account to look at stuff on Instagram, which has pretty much kept me off Instagram up until very recently. You do have to join Instagram.
There you go.
Just to be technical about it, I don't know. Yeah, and you can get me on Twitter as well, my own account, @RobCudmore, if you so wish. I don't tweet very often, but if you tweet me, I promise to reply. How about that?
Right, have a very pleasant week. Do all your chores, do your homework, be nice to your family, and leave the toilet seat up, I think. Is that the right way? Maybe not. I don't know. I don't know why I'm even talking. Bye.
And don't despair. Spring is just around the corner. What it's doing there, I don't know, but let's hope it comes round safely.